Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
What the Fed really thinks about the economy, metals that are more valuable than gold, scandal in the tea and crumpet world of international cricket. Yes, we've got it all today. Also, your letters from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Deluxe Corp, a partner to more than 4 million small businesses with logo design, websites, email marketing, and online networking. Deluxe.com. And by Ally Bank, committed to customer service. At allybank.com, visitors can chat online with a customer care associate 24/7.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, the last day of August 2010. Good, as always, to have you here. We will start today with a very brief peek inside the mind of Ben Bernanke. The Federal Reserve released the minutes of its most recent interest rate meeting today. Lots of macroeconomic blather that is, frankly, too painful to go into. But there is one thing that's worth noting. You know how the Fed chairman has been saying in speeches and whatnot around the country that the Fed is ready to do whatever it takes to keep the economy from sliding backwards? Well, what the Fed says inside its conference room is a little more nuanced. The minutes say the economy would have to worsen, and here's the key word, appreciably, before the Fed pulls out the big guns. Have to say, it would be interesting to hear what they're thinking Friday morning. That's when the August unemployment report comes out. We'll have to see, I suppose. If you happen to be in the market for a new car, you know how the variables can be endless. Electric, increasingly. Hybrids, gas only. What's greenest versus what's cheapest versus what can fit all the kids and the groceries. The Environmental Protection Agency has a new system that ranks cars by emissions and the cost of gas to run them. It says assigning an A, a B, or a C to your car's MPG would just make things easier. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
The EPA hasn't changed the way it rates fuel economy in more than 20 years. The proposed new stickers would show energy use and emissions. Kenny Burns is sales manager at Hollywood Toyota. He says gas mileage is already prominent on each car's sticker.
I'm looking at a Corolla, which is 26 in the city, 34 in the highway, and between those two numbers is a shaded fuel pump like at a gas station.
The EPA says that's not enough information. It wants to tell consumers how much and what kind of energy a car uses. One idea is to give grades for overall fuel economy. That Corolla would get a big letter B on its tag. Its cousin, the Prius Hybrid, an A-. And Beefcake Brother, the Tundra truck, a D. There are no Fs. Kenny Byrne says grades could affect how cars get sold.
If it's an A or a B, sales will use it as a selling point. If it's less than that, I don't think that's going to be something that they would be pointing out.
He says people who buy trucks or SUVs know they're not fuel efficient, so a C or a D won't change their minds. John Linkov is managing editor at Consumer Reports. He says the grades could influence people.
There are people who may shun a vehicle simply because it gets a C, such as a minivan, and then go for a vehicle that's an A or a B and end up not being happy at the end of the day because it doesn't fit their needs.
Linkov also says the main reason people buy more efficient cars is to save money on fuel. While zero-emissions electric cars get an A-plus for emissions and cost from the EPA, that grade doesn't include the price of a charging station, which could run a few thousand dollars. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Some healthcare news of a Tuesday afternoon. Retirement is a huge factor in healthcare costs. Medicare doesn't kick in until 65 for most people. Healthcare reform should make insurance more affordable for early retirees, but not until 2014. So the government has set up a fund to reimburse employers for some of their retiree health expenses. Today, the Health and Human Services Department announced the first round of companies that are eligible for that money. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Nearly 2,000 employers, from businesses to unions to governments, will be reimbursed by the Early Retiree Reinsurance Program. The federal government will pay 80% of retiree medical claims above a $5,000 deductible. HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says the goal is to encourage employers to maintain health insurance for former workers.
The percentage of large firms providing workers with retiree health coverage is dropping. It was 66% of employers in 1988, and it's now down to 29% in 2009.
Congress set up the fund as a carrot to keep company support for health reform. Many firms are locked into insuring their retirees, even though they no longer offer that retirement benefit for new workers. The fund will cover claims between now and 2014, when a more competitive insurance market should lower premiums for retirees. But Congress set aside only $5 billion.
Some analysts believe that this will not be sufficient.
Catherine Sullivan-Hare advises companies on health care benefits. She figures $5 billion will last only about 2 years.
There's good precedent for believing so. Health care costs have always exceeded expectations.
If the money runs out, Congress will be left to decide whether to offer more support or face the prospect of employers throwing retirees off the company health plan. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
There was a time in my life I was somewhat between jobs when I figured that if things didn't work out, I could always just go be the fry guy at McDonald's. The menu there is a lot busier these days. McDonald's lineup of cold frappes and fruit smoothies has bumped sales and the bottom line. And so in Arizona alone, that means maybe 1,000 new jobs. From KJZZ in Phoenix, Peter O'Dowd reports.
McDonald's will sponsor a one-day hiring blitz in Arizona on September 8th. Area Supervisor Jerry Gerke says the statewide effort is a first. He says each restaurant will hire anywhere between 2 and 8 part-time workers.
Our history has been that we are able to promote and advance folks, so there could be more down the road for folks than just the part-time.
Those workers have smoothies to thank for their new jobs. The icy beverages debuted at the McCafe Beverage Bar this year. An intern July earnings report showed surprising gains. The chain reported a nearly 6% increase in month-over-month sales. It's the biggest jump since April 2009.
Even McDonald's was suffering last year, but now you're seeing them starting to pick up the pace.
Steve West follows the restaurant industry for the brokerage firm Stiefel Nicholas. He says those cold drinks have been a big part of the chain's success. He says McDonald's frappes and smoothies are cheaper than similar products at places like Starbucks. And he says the weather helped.
Especially this summer, being as hot as it was, so it really kind of hits a little bit of a home run with the consumers there.
West says this is part of a larger effort to improve quality at McDonald's that appears to be working. In the past few years, the restaurant has started using Angus beef and brewing fancier blends of coffee. West says all these innovations have left other fast food chains behind, even as the economy continues to falter. In Phoenix, I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, traders bid a lousy August. Good riddance. We will have the details when we do the numbers. Gold hit a two-month high today, $1,248 an ounce. As attractive as gold is when the economy is questionable, though, neodymium may be a more important metal today. What's that you say? You never heard of it? What about lanthanum? They are what are called rare earth metals. There are about 17 of them. And they're used pretty extensively in things like hybrid cars and smartphones and a lot of other gadgets that we are coming to depend on. Thing is, China produces almost all of the world's rare earth metals, and last month Beijing cut way back on exports of them. Our China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
There are more than 50 pounds of rare earth metals under the hood of a Toyota Prius. They're the magnets in the car's electric motor and a big part of its long-lasting battery. Electric vehicles use even more. At this year's China Rare Earth Summit in Beijing, a lot of foreign visitors were looking worried.
My plea today was, China, you are the leader, yes, but as the leader, you've got responsibilities.
Dudley Kingsnorth is an industry consultant. What's scary to him is not that China controls the world's rare earths, it's that China doesn't want to share. It's put quotas on the amount it exports. Last year, China allowed less than half of what it mined to be sold to the rest of the world.
If these quotas stay in place, then what's going to happen is less and less of the manufacture is going to take place in the U.S. and more of the manufacture will take place in China. And we all know once those manufacturing jobs have gone, they're gone. I mean, it's not a temporary situation.
And that could be bad news for the Obama administration. The president wants a clean energy workforce to help revive the U.S. economy. Industry insiders say China's export quotas are already causing a global shortfall of rare earths. Toyota wouldn't comment on how this is impacting production of the Prius, but the company is reportedly looking to Canada to find more of these minerals. This seems like a logical solution. You see, rare earths aren't that rare. North America sits on 15% of the world's reserves. But there's one small problem, says commodities analyst Jack Lifton.
I don't think that America is going to produce any rare earths because I believe that we cannot do it economically.
But that hasn't stopped one American company, Molycorp, from trying to resurrect a mine in Southern California that once coughed up more than half of the world's supply. But Lifton says it's too late to compete with China.
We've been outfoxed in capitalism by our friends, the communists.
Lifton blames decades of outsourcing by American businesses.
They gave away the farm. They gave away the intellectual property, all of this technology given away to get access to raw materials and cheap labor. And now all of a sudden it's a problem. Fortunately for the Chinese, the same stupid people run the American economy that ran it into the ground.
And that's good news for Zhang Anwen. He's a government official with China's Rare Earth Association. When asked why China was cutting off the global rare earth supply, he smiled, played it safe, and towed the party line, quoting China Premier Wen Jiabao.
China will not completely stop exporting rare earth metals to other countries. The most important thing is to set a reasonable price and a reasonable volume of production. However, China will continue to put quotas on exports.
That's small assurance to companies that need rare earths to keep their products tumbling off the production line. But industry insiders say there's at least a little hope. The U.S. government is asking business groups to provide evidence that China is hoarding rare earth supplies, a possible case for the World Trade Organization. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
You know, there's nothing like a good sports scandal to get you going. Baseball has doping. Basketball's got refs on the take. Even Olympic ice skating judges have been known to cheat. Now, though, and not for the first time, either scandal in a cricket match, a big one, too, England versus Pakistan. Except the match was fixed. Until that scandal broke, commentators in Britain were amazed about the quality of the game.
What a day, what a turnaround. There's only one sport that this could happen in, Geoffrey Boycott, and that's Test cricket.
Well, all I would say, those of us who see a lot of cricket, and there'll be a lot of people out there watch cricket all their life, but sometimes you see special days that remain in your memory, and this will be one of them.
I can talk sports all day, but I need help with Test cricket. So we've called Matt Fry. He is a big cricket fan, also the host of BBC World News America. Matt, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
This match, of course, will be remembered not for the quality of the play, but for the allegations against the Pakistani team of this bribery.
Indeed, and quite lurid they are too. I mean, this all came to light when a famous British tabloid, and it's always the tabloids in Britain, basically recorded a Pakistani businessman in London secretly accepting a bribe in return for telling Pakistani players in his pay that they should fix the match, and therefore people betting on that match, knowing a certain outcome, would make an awful lot of money.
The first thing I thought of, and I don't know how well you know your American baseball, but the 1919 Black Sox and Shoeless Joe Jackson and Say It Ain't So Joe throwing the World Series. I mean, that's what this is in the world of cricket.
It is. But, you know, for cricket, I don't know if you've been to Pakistan or India or indeed any other part of the world touched by the British Empire once upon a time. I mean, cricket is really a religion in those places. If you go to Pakistan today, every street corner of dry land will have someone with a cricket bat and a cricket ball on it. It is a sport of the people, even more so than baseball in this country. People in Pakistan, certainly that we've talked on our program in recent days, are furious. They're saying that, you know, shooting isn't good enough for these cricketers who've been caught.
You know, I was just going to say, let me extend the baseball analogy here. I mean, we've had our scandals in baseball in America are doping, and there have been all kinds of congressional hearings, and Roger Clemens has been indicted, and yet people still use performance-enhancing drugs, and clearly people in cricket are still betting and gambling.
They are, and I think one has to say here that cricket and gambling, they go together at times a bit like apple pie and cream, and gambling is illegal in many parts of South Asia, so these are illegal gambling rackets where you can make an awful lot of money. And there's always been that temptation. The really sad thing is that it keeps cropping back. I mean, it's like a sort of bad sore that won't go away despite all the measures that have supposedly been put in place. And it also, to be honest, runs counter with the kind of image of cricket that I grew up with, which was basically the game of gentlemen on a large pitch, everyone wearing white, the soft sound of the bat against the ball, perhaps someone on the sidelines sipping a warm English beer and chewing into a cucumber sandwich. Well, all that, quite frankly, is piffle.
About the match itself, just before you go, this was on the most famous cricket ground in the world, Lords in England. It was Pakistan and England. I mean, this was a big deal even before people started cheating.
The fact that this scandal was uncovered in the middle of this match in the most hallowed cricket ground in the world, of course, is brazen beyond belief. And it's interesting, they were replaying on British television some of the clips where, you know, you saw the Pakistani cricketers bowling a ball. And what they did is that they kind of overstepped the line and basically threw a non-ball. And the commentators were saying, hang on a minute, that was really bad. I mean, how could he do something as awful as that and do it repeatedly? Well, now we know why.
And I won't even ask you to explain the rules of cricket. Matt Fry is a cricket fan, also the host of BBC World News America. Matt, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Coming up.
These are historic structures. You know, many of these bridges are 80, 90, 100 years old.
Billboards coming soon to a landmark near you. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average eked out a tiny gain today. 4 points closed at 10,014. The NASDAQ backed up 0.25%, 5 points, finished at 2114. The S&P 500 traded nearly flat, ending things at 1,049. For the month, and it was a bruiser, the Dow off 4.3%, its worst August since 2001. The NASDAQ plunged 6.2%. The S&P 500 gave back 4.7%. Financials had a decent day. J.P. Morgan Chase banked a nearly 0.5% gain. Bank of America deposited more than 1% today. Merger mania moved to retail today. Saks backed close to a 20% gain on rumors it might be a takeover target. A lift in consumer confidence boosted other retailers. JCPenney was up more than 2%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.47%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price, understanding the connections of a complex global economy. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. Let us give you the business 24 hours a day. Just tap marketplace.org into your mobile phone for the latest financial news and reports from around the globe on how the economy is affecting our lives.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on construction spending for July. Major U.S. car makers are scheduled to release sales figures for August. And grab the barbecue sauce. September is National Chicken Month. Not to honor the chicken, but to get you to eat it. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Your letters were in plentiful supply this week after our story about the employment agency Manpower. They surveyed 35,000 companies worldwide. They found that the number one hiring challenge in big economies is a lack of skilled tradesmen, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, those folks. Olivia Gable from Austin, Texas, was wondering, as were many of you, how that could be true.
Where exactly is there a shortage? My father has been a carpenter for more than 40 years, and these past 4 to 5 years have been the worst he's ever experienced. He's lived in Florida, where there is no work at all for him, and in Texas, which is supposed to be doing better than other states.
A shortage of another kind now. Apparently, there isn't enough room on our wireless networks to do everything we want to do. All the data from photos that we upload and videos that we download is jamming the airwaves. A suggestion in our story about that last week was to increase capacity by having television broadcasters sell off part of the spectrum that they use for over-the-air TV. Lousy idea, says Randy Spears from Columbus, Ohio.
So millions of people should be giving up their television reception so that others have the convenience of watching Hulu on their cell phones? During these recessionary times, many people have had to turn to over-the-air television, and this commentator wants to preference those that can afford a $30 a month data plan. Yeah, that's a great idea.
If you were to come up with a great idea to solve the wireless network congestion, you would probably want to apply for a patent to protect the business idea. And then you'd have to wait and wait and wait some more for something to happen. The patent office has 750,000 applications sitting around waiting, a pile it would take 3 years to get through. There is talk of raising fees to bring down that backlog, but John McGill of Woburn, Massachusetts, is worried about how much it already costs.
It's very difficult to file successfully without an attorney. While the filing fee may be only $500, attorney fees for a small business that doesn't have in-house attorneys are typically about $25,000.
Finally today, my final note from yesterday, the observation that Borders Books is going to put Build-A-Bear outlets inside its stores. And I asked for help understanding the business connection between books and bears. There were more than a few puns on bear markets and all of that. Best letter, though, came from a guy named David Burns. Didn't say where he was from. Dude, he wrote. Three words. Winnie the Pooh. You can always write and tell us what you think. Bears or no bears. Go to marketplace.org. The link you want is in the upper right-hand corner of the page. It's that one that says contact. Internet television is all the rage these days. Apple is doing some of it, Google is doing some of it, Hulu is doing it big time, as you heard back there in letters. And that is forcing companies like Comcast to think outside the cable box. Last January, Comcast agreed to buy NBC Universal for nearly $14 billion. The deal is going to give it control of both the transmission pipes, that is to say the cable, and what's in the pipelines, the shows. Not to mention a big foothold in online television. NBC owns a chunk of Hulu. Federal regulators do still have to sign off on that deal, and Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains they are zeroing in on one key part, what effect it might have on the internet television business.
Online TV sites like Hulu.com are a big threat to cable TV. Why pay a cable bill when you can watch many shows for free on the web? Comcast figures it could compete better if it owned NBC. NBC owns a lot of TV shows, like 30 Rock and The Office.
Jim, where do I find the black pearl?
It's all about control. Gary Arlen heads Arlen Communications. He says Comcast might gain an unfair advantage in distributing shows like The Office.
It might be delivered faster. It might be delivered in higher resolution.
Regulators are expected to approve the Comcast-NBC Universal deal with some restrictions. Still, the merger could give Comcast a major leg up over the likes of Google and Apple. Google is pushing new technology for set-top boxes designed to make it easier to stream shows into your living room. Apple is expected to revamp Apple TV. Telecommunications analyst Ben Piper says cable TV companies realize they're working with an outdated business model.
Today's high schoolers really in the next 5 or 10 years are going to be the ones making these decisions about whether or not they actually need a $60 cable subscription, particularly when mom and dad aren't paying for it anymore.
Time Warner Cable is fighting that trend with a new subscription plan. You get a password with your cable account that you can use online. Joseph Turo teaches communications at the University of Pennsylvania.
You can watch it online, you can watch it anywhere, you just put your password in and Time Warner will say that's fine.
Turo says Comcast and Verizon's Fios are doing the same thing. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Here in Los Angeles last week, a guy got arrested for putting up a huge billboard on the side of an office building that he owns. The actual citation was for a bunch of safety and fire code violations, but the L.A. City Council says the real offense here is that enormous billboards aren't much more than urban eyesores, which is why they were banned last year. There is another school of thought, though, that those supersized ads can also be a cash cow. From WLRN in Miami, Florida, Kenny Malone explains.
In downtown Miami, there's an 8-story building that looks like a giant beige box. It's a chiller plant that provides air conditioning for a lot of government buildings in Miami-Dade County. Jerry Hall's with the county government. He agrees. It's pretty ugly.
There's very few windows. It's got a lot of water coming out of the sides of it because it's got cooling towers.
What kind of architecture is this?
Yeah. Mid-70s industrial with stucco finish.
The chiller plant overlooks a sprawling web of interstate ramps. So you're driving north, checking out the city.
Literally, this building pops up, and it's right there. It's what you see for a good 15 seconds.
And now the county is cashing in on its 15 seconds of fame. The chiller plant is sporting a shiny new ad for the Apple iPad. And the county will bank a $220,000 rental fee and 16% of the sign's profits.
The industry that we're in, there are many folks who don't necessarily love what we do.
Mike Friedman is CEO of Fuel Outdoor Advertising. They're the ones renting the side of the chiller plant. He says everyone wins with the Dade project. Advertisers get unique access. His company gets the contract, and the county gets much-needed non-tax revenue.
It's actually the ultimate win-win-win situation.
Except the potential loser could be the people who don't want to have to look at a sign.
That is where I would say to you, let's look at a photograph prior to the advertising being placed there, and let's look at the chiller facility today. Let's do the ultimate taste test, so to speak.
Excuse me, guys. Excuse me. I'm doing a taste test, so to speak.
In my left hand, a before photo of the plain old chiller plant. In my right, a photo of the building sporting an iPad ad.
And it's a simple question. Which one do you prefer?
Probably this one.
The right one with the advertisement.
The one on the right because it has an iPad?
They wouldn't put the iPad on that building. I think that's a prison building.
The advertisements gives us a sign that there's a city there.
Okay, well, maybe people do prefer covering up an ugly 70s building. But what if it were a more notable landmark?
These are historic structures. You know, many of these bridges are 80, 90, 100 years old.
Brian Steele is a spokesman for the Chicago Department of Transportation. It oversees the famous downtown drawbridges spanning the Chicago River. The city faces a record $654 million budget gap, so it's trying something new. A pilot program will let corporations buy a spot on bridge towers during the holidays. But they're not ads, Brian Steele insists.
There's no 20% off. There's no visit us for your holiday needs. It's simply a message related to the holidays and then the name of the sponsor.
Chicago estimates bridge sponsorship could be worth millions. So the city's already exploring other public spaces, like ads on the sides of government vehicles. In Miami, I'm Kenny Malone for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering total return strategies designed to match your goals. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today brought to you by a company over in the UK. It's called, and listen carefully now, End Vinyl-y, as in records made from vinyl. For the low, low cost of just £2,000, about $3,000 American, after you die, you can have your ashes pressed into a record. Check it out for yourself, endvinyl.com. And while you're doing that, think about this for me. If you're going to have your earthly remains pressed into a record when you go, what's the song going to be? I've been trying to decide for hours now, still nothing. And please, no suggestions of Stairway to Heaven. That's just tacky, 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 tacky. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow squeaked out a fraction of a gain, just 5 points. The NASDAQ off a 0.25%, 5 points. The S&P 500 traded up a hair less than a point. Brand new month tomorrow, everybody. That's the good part. Thanks to Rada Beat and Ethan Lindsay on our Morning Report crew. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time on this program, let your cell phone be your guide.
I can hold up my phone just as if I'm taking a picture, and it will tell me which points of interest are within a surrounding vicinity.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Do hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.